direct from the Los Angeles Underground. It's time for your new favorite podcast, The Superiority Complex. It's like honey in your ear holes. Welcome back to The Superiority Complex, everybody. It is me, your friendly neighborhood podcast host, along with my friendly neighborhood podcast co-host, Mr. John Sandy.
Howdy.
How you doing, John?
Good. How you doing?
John, it's just you and me today.
Just you and me.
Like the old days. like the old days.
In your living room.
Those were the days. Oh, by the way, quick programming note. We actually have, John, believe it or not, a couple of people who have decided to listen to the show from the beginning. They're going back over 200 episodes trying to catch up. And so they were telling me that a few of our early episodes were they were having trouble accessing them. I don't know if it was a problem with Podbean or what have you. So I've actually gone back, and the first, I believe, 7 episodes I re-uploaded.
Ah.
The only thing that sucks is the way Podbean works is I actually used a lot of my monthly allotment for space to re-upload them. I didn't think it would have an effect because I'm, in essence, uploading the same file. Mm. So I'm not taking up any more space, but it does count against my monthly allotment. So I won't be able to do that often. So if you are listening to an old episode and you happen to have trouble accessing it or it's not downloading, please let me know. Shoot us an email or contact us on Twitter at SuperComplex or send us an email at superioritycomplexshow@gmail.com. Or if you know me, some people know me, you can let me know personally. Just let me know what episode it is so I can download or I can upload that specific episode. But I was able to upload episodes 1 through 7. That includes John Sandy's first appearance on the show, I
really?
Believe.
Really? 1 through 7?
I don't know if you're there yet. Maybe not.
I wonder if you've been doing it a while. But you've been doing it from your living room.
February of 2013 was when we started.
Somewhere I've got them on disc. The two shows, the first two shows I did with you, I've got on disc.
I burned them for you.
Burned them for me, yeah.
For posterity.
I don't know how long you've been doing it before I did that.
It's February 2013 is when we started.
5 years.
Yeah, so 6 years. It'll be coming up on 6 years.
And I don't know when I started sitting in, like, on a permanent basis.
Caitlin Despain was the first co-host you worked with. You were here when it was just me, you, and Katie.
Yeah.
That's when you really became a regular. So that's got to be at least 3 or 4 years now. A lot of those episodes are I've had a couple of issues with Podbean, and I need to maybe think about this year moving stuff. We have some decisions to make as far as the podcast is concerned, John.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I mean, it's going to keep going, obviously, since I love the sound of my own voice. But we missed you last week. I had jury duty. I had to perform my civic duty. I was eventually excused, but it was 3 days of jury selection. Oof. And it was a heinous crime that was being tried. So I'm glad I didn't get picked.
Yeah.
I don't want to go into detail, but it wasn't going to be a fun. You know, you always want like a fun like
fender bender.
Fender bender, or you know, where you just hear people with like New York accents, or like a ticket scalping incident, like on The Odd Couple. You want something like that.
You know, this is like a murder or something.
No, even worse. Oh. You know, there was going to be a lot of, it was going to be bad. So I'm glad I didn't get picked.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, the judge could not have been nicer. He was great to the people, and was very, you know, I've been there when judges are very dismissive, when people have excuses for why they can't be there. The only thing he would not buy, the great thing was almost everybody up there tried the financial hardship.
Oh, that
excuse.
Doesn't work.
And he
they
said,
don't care.
And he just said, well, I appreciate your sacrifice, as do the people. And then he would just go on.
No, they do not. That is not a consideration at all. It doesn't matter. So you got to come up with a different tact if you're trying to work. Get out of it. Yeah, that does not work because everybody has got a financial
My favorite was the guy who just pretty much said, I believe the defendant's guilty. And the judge was like, okay, like, thank you for your
time. That's a good way to do it because the lawyers don't want you. That's the thing. If you're trying to get out of it, even if you got like a hardcore judge, if you put any seed of doubt into the lawyers, they're like, oh, we don't want this guy's going to be problems.
Yeah.
This guy's going to be trouble. We don't want him.
This is what I did. Anytime they would ask me a question, I would answer truthfully,
yes.
But then I would add the phrase "in accordance with the prophecy." So, very quickly they realized I was not right for the jury.
So. And then you said, it reminds me of when I was a little boy. I pulled on the string tighter and tighter, and I broke my yo-yo. They said, okay, next.
At one point, they said, do you have any hobbies? And I said, why, even the moon's afraid of me.
Could you please remove the goggles and gauze, please? Who is this guy?
I want mustard.
I want a room. A whole day's work ruined by a stupid woman.
I forgot his mustard.
Oh, you'll be the death of me yet.
That is my favorite Universal horror.
Yeah.
That is my favorite. I do love Bride of Frankenstein, and you know, the atmosphere of Dracul is hard to beat.
Yeah, but, Invisible Man's.
Invisible Man, just for Claude Rains. And you don't even see him. It's all with the voice.
It's the voice and the body language. You know, you watch what he's doing with his hands and the way he holds himself. And a lot of it's the body language. He's there. You don't see his face, but the body.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah, they got the right guy. They got the right guy, I'll tell you.
I just realized I was watching, you know, Amazon has been putting out a lot of... what I love about Amazon Prime as opposed to Netflix is now turning its attention to becoming a major studio. You know, they've got Roma.
And it's working, which because is the Oscars, they got the most, I think they got the most nominations.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And then, you know, Alfonso Cuarón said, I could never shop this. Nobody was going to make a black and white movie about 1970s political upheaval in Mexico. You know, no major studio was going to do that. And Netflix took a chance. And, you know, they got this huge hit with Bird Box now.
And the Coen brothers, they said they couldn't have made that anywhere
else. Buster Scruggs. Yeah. It's been a big year for Netflix. Yeah. So they've gone away from kind of some of the lower rung movies that used to kind of they used to kind of use to fill the roster there. And Prime is picking up a lot of that stuff.
Amazon.
And Prime. So I started watching, I think it was King of Kings, one of the 60s biblical epics.
With Jeffrey Hunter?
No, it wasn't the one with Jeffrey Hunter. It was the one with Max von Sydow.
I think that's the greatest story ever told.
That's what it is. Yeah, and Claude Rains is Herod in the beginning. It's Claude Rains, and he's going, now where are you going to? I can't do it, Claude Rains. He's like, where are you going to visit the children, this child? Tell me where this child can be found. I'm like, oh, my God, he's going to murder the babies. Good stuff.
I know. I love it. These kings, like Cedric Hardwick and the Ten Commandments. It's like, really? That's the Pharaoh? It's like, Sir Cedric Hardwick?
Yeah. Sherlock Holmes on radio?
It's like, you're like, wow, he doesn't look Egyptian to me.
And then, you know, the flip side of that is that you have Yul Brynner playing somebody in The Magnificent Seven who you don't know.
Yeah.
Could be. What did they say? He was Creole, right? Or Cajun? I don't remember what they said.
I think if you look him up, they go, I don't know. You look him up. Like, even Wikipedia goes, I don't know. Could be Austrian, Russian. We don't know.
He's one of those people you could believe whatever. If you found out he was.
Like Anthony Quinn.
Yeah.
You're like, he could play anything. Mm-hmm. He plays, you know, Greek, Irish, you know, Italian, you know, Mexican, anything. Yeah.
Yeah. He was half Mexican, half Greek, I believe.
And Irish, I think.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
Quinn.
Oh, Quinn, yeah.
I think so. But yeah, God, you know, I don't know with Yul Brynner. It is something very exotic. Somewhere, somebody was able to tell me, and I've already forgotten.
Yul, what kind of name is Yul?
Yeah, and I don't even know if that, I think that is obviously a stage name. It's probably.
Russian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but very exotic, so obviously he can play just about anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he was Russian.
Russian, but also Siamese.
Ah.
No. He was also Ramesses.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Ramesses.
And he invented the condom. I don't know why I said that.
He called it Ramesses.
He says, it is ribbed for her pleasure. Et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I've been, John, have you been catching up on anything? Like, what have you caught lately? I know you go to the movies more than I do.
But, you know, I haven't seen anything lately. I still haven't seen Aquaman. I still can't bring myself to get interested enough to go see Aquaman, even though everybody I've talked to said it's really good. I just can't bring myself to buy the ticket.
Our friends on Nerd It Down loved it.
I know everybody loved it. At work, everybody who's seen it said this
was great. I will give you the one dissenting opinion of someone I trust, Kyle Dodson, who produces Rock Solid for Pat Francis. His Facebook post was, Aquaman is 10 of the worst movies I've ever seen rolled into one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Interesting.
And I'm like, wow, that's
the first bad review I've heard.
Yeah. And he's pretty dead on. And here's the thing. He's not a hater. He is a huge comic book guy and a huge DC guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So he wants them to do well. And I think he's just constantly disappointed that they're not
That's
good
the
movies.
First bad review I've heard for Aquaman, even the print critics. Everybody seemed to really dig it. So I guess.
But do you think it's because the bar is set so low already?
Oh, for DC stuff, maybe. I don't know. I'll give it a try at some point. I did go to see Chaney instead.
How was that?
It was very good.
Yeah?
Very good. Yeah, really sharp. Well done.
And this is the story of Lon Chaney, of course.
That's right.
Man of a Thousand Faces.
Christian Bale is Chaney, Man of a Thousand Faces.
In London
After I got it, Mystery Man. See, I'd pay money to see Mystery Man. Man of a Thousand Faces.
That's it.
Don't step on it. It might be Lon Chaney.
What?
You've heard of that.
No.
There's all these little things. Lon Chaney's going to get you if you don't watch out.
I know that one
of the things was, don't step on it. It might be Lon Chaney.
Wow.
You know. You ever see the movie with James Cagney playing Lon Chaney?
No.
Oh, God, you would love it, Mario. Man of a Thousand Faces.
I know the name. Yeah, I know
it. It was made in the 50s. It was James Cagney playing Lon Chaney.
That's amazing.
And really well done.
He says, top of the world, Mon. He rips his phantom mask off.
Well, that's the thing. You know, you end up thinking that Lon Chaney must have sounded like James Cagney. But he's really good in that. And there's some interesting people in it. Jane Greer plays his second wife.
Okay.
Dorothy Malone plays his first wife. Jim Backus plays his manager.
Beautiful.
And
Mr. Howell.
Now, this is what's interesting. Playing Irving Thalberg at MGM is...
Buster Keaton? In a...
Oh, Christ. Who's the guy that ran Paramount? The kid stays in the picture, Robert...
Townsend.
No. Christ.
Not Robert Townsend. Robert... I'm thinking Robert Townsend from Hollywood Shuffle.
This is embarrassing.
Robert, the kid stays in the picture.
The guy that ran Paramount when they were doing The Godfather and all that stuff.
Robert Evans.
That's it, Robert Evans. So Robert Evans was an actor before he was a producer. And so Robert Evans plays, a young Robert Evans plays Irving Thalberg in that movie.
That's crazy.
And he was handpicked by Irving Thalberg's widow, Norma Shearer.
Wow, really?
Yeah, she says, I have final say over who gets to play him in this picture, and I think you're going to be perfect, you know. So
that's crazy.
I don't know. Anyway, it's worth seeing because, you know, it's just well done. I don't know that it's 100% accurate. You know, it gets to be a little Hollywood. Some of these biopics aren't right on the money.
It's always tough with a, you know, you got to make a story. That's what we were just talking about, Queen. I was surprised that Bohemian Rhapsody was picked for Best Picture because as a celebration of the music, it's great.
Yeah.
But as a movie, it's like every other musical biography. Yeah. It's just like it's a paint by numbers thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I really enjoyed it, but it didn't seem particularly.
I mean, there's a few of those that don't quite fit that mold that are great. I just watched the Buddy Holly story last night.
Yep.
And
that's very well done.
And it's very well done because you have he does his own playing. He was overdubbed, but he did play his own guitar. Yep. Does his own singing.
Yeah.
And you know he went through great. He lost like 50 pounds for the role or something to look like.
That's a good one. And Ray, I think Ray is one of the
Ray's
all-time
a great
best.
One because that...
He can play piano. Jamie Foxx can play piano. And he got the voice so dead on.
Yeah.
The speaking voice so dead
and on. It wasn't one of these... It wasn't a movie that necessarily glossed over some of the more questionable things in his career. And he was on board. He said, yeah, it's fine. That's the way it happened.
Yeah.
So that's kind of nice that you got like a real...
Yeah. That's one of the all-time best. The Johnny Cash one. Was pretty good.
I'll tell you what, La Bamba for me is great.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because it's more than just about Richie Valens. It's this whole family dynamic.
Yeah.
And if you grew up in a Mexican American family, that there's so much in that movie that you know they caught because it's only like somebody grew up in a house like that.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do a double feature, but it was late. I was gonna go straight from Buddy Holly's story into La Bamba. I had one funny thing. My wife, we were going to play a game last night, and my wife was like, let's watch a movie instead. So we watched, so I said, let's watch Buddy Holly's story. I haven't seen it in a while. So we sat, we watched the whole thing. And at the very end, when he's doing the winter tour in Clear Lake, he calls out the big bopper on stage, and he calls out Richie Valens. And Richie Valens is playing maracas. And my wife, who is now woke AF, says, oh, sure, make Richie Valens play the maracas. I was like, I'm not even offended that he's playing the maracas.
What's woke AF mean?
Woke AF. As AF means
oh,
as.
Oh, woke as fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, woke AF. My wife is woke. Fight the power, Joe.
Sure, give him the maracas.
Yeah, sure.
Did she say that during Some Like It Hot? Sure, give Jack Lemmon the maracas.
Yeah.
That's so racist.
Gosh, that's another great one we have to watch that we
will
miss.
That turn up?
Some Like It Hot. We're past it.
But you said you would insert some that didn't make it.
What we're going to start doing, John, and this is if you're a fan of the Digital Movie Club, what I want to do to help alleviate a little bit of the burden is we might have to start going out of order in the 70s.
There you go.
Part of what I wanted to do was kind of you could see the progression of things.
Yeah.
But now that we're getting to the 70s, you've kind of seen the 60s were that one decade where you really needed to see this is the Magnificent Seven at the start of the 60s in 1960. Now here's 1969. Here's the Wild Bunch. Here's how films have progressed.
Yeah.
You've seen. So now that we're in the 70s and beyond, there isn't that much of a leap as far as...
You could say that everything, we're still in the post-Star Wars world.
Yeah.
So once you get to Star Wars, yeah, I don't know if there's any huge shifts except for like digital effects
take
leaps and bounds. But I don't know. We're still sort of in the post-Star Wars world in a way.
So what I want to do is now that stuff is available... So for example, my point that I was making earlier was Amazon now has... this library of stuff that they're putting out, like Greatest Story Ever Told, mm-hmm. and all these movies that we may miss. The Poseidon Adventure was one that I don't own, but it's out on Prime right now, so let's watch it. It's fun. So, for example, Netflix right now has Apocalypse Now. Mm. So it's like, well, why don't we just go ahead and watch that? We'll throw that in there while it's available. That way people who want to follow along, or even for everybody here, it's a little bit less of a hit if you don't have to go out and rent every movie.
Yeah.
Or if I know where it's coming up, I could just bring you the disc and say, John, here's my copy of Apocalypse.
It hasn't been very, I've got that, but I appreciate that. I never even thought about that for Battle for the Planet of the Apes. Most of these things, oddly enough, most of the movies we've been doing, I have a copy or I can get it at the library.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, there's one I can't get my hands on, so I'll order it at Levels or make the drive.
You said library. Let me give you a quick plug. There are two... there are two apps if you have a library card. I use one called Hoopla. I know that if you're in Orange County, you can use the Orange County Library. I'm not sure if they have it with LA County yet, but it's Hoopla, just Hoop LA. If you have a library card, you sign up for Hoopla, and you can get 6 titles a month for free. And that includes video, audiobooks. You can download ebooks. You can download music. 6 titles a month for free. So that's a good way to find some stuff that's hard to find. And then there's one called Canopy with a K.
Yeah, I heard about
that. And I think LA County's using Canopy.
Right.
So I might have to use my handy-dandy Whittier Public Library card.
And it's a lot of indie and classics.
Yeah.
And they say this will somehow fill that hole that was left when...
Criterion and all that?
Yeah, what was the... film...
Filmstruck.
Filmstruck. They said this will help to fill the hole left... that Filmstruck left when it pulled out.
Yeah.
So, I heard about that, and that sounds like that's a way to go.
Yeah, that's
Canopy.
That's your LA County Library.
Yeah.
So you have your and I think Orange County Library is going to the girl at the Orange County Library told me that they're going to start using Canopy as well sometime this year.
That's great.
They already have it set. But it's great. When I had jury duty, I actually downloaded a couple of books and just took them on my Kindle and was able to just, you know, kind of sit there and read while you're waiting to get picked.
Yeah.
Use those. I mean, use resources. But
that great? Because they say they will have a lot of indie and classics.
Yeah. I watched the Hamilton documentary on there. And then the apps that you have like a Roku box or Amazon, like a Fire Stick, the Hoopla app is on there, so you can watch it on your TV.
Yeah.
You're not limited to just watching it on your laptop or your you can actually stream it to your television. So those are two really good apps. Hoopla, Sandy, our friend Sandy was the one that told me about that. So thanks, Sandy. Not John Sandy, just regular Sandy. So Chaney was good.
We took the long way around on that one. It was very good. I didn't see The Big Short. I guess that's the other one that Adam McKay did. He started, I guess, doing stuff like the Will Ferrell comedies, mm-hmm. like Anchorman and all that.
Yeah.
This made me want to see The Big Short because there are humorous bits in this. It's not a comedy, but he's not afraid to use a little humor in the appropriate moments. And the casting is just insane. Christian Bale does a great job. The makeup on him makes him look a dead ringer for Dick Cheney at all ages.
Yeah.
And they got Sam Rockwell playing George W. Bush, and he's right on the money.
Sam Rockwell is so underrated.
He's such a great actor.
He's a great character.
And he's not doing an impression. You know, he's really doing, it's understated, but boy, does he sell it. And let's see, Steve Carell's playing Donald Rumsfeld. And it's just, it was just really well done. It kind of reminded, you forget, things are so crappy right now. You forget how scary they were like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
this kind of shows you just how much power Dick Cheney had for people that didn't realize. Everybody sort of expected he was the guy pulling the strings behind W. And boy, this just shows you how he did it. And scary stuff, really scary stuff in a different way. Now it's scary because you got a guy at the helm that doesn't have a clue and is only there for his own ego. And this was a whole different thing. This was, the accumulation of power. They at least had an agenda, which doesn't make it much, much less scary. It just seems a little scary that we got a guy who's just in it for himself, period, and hasn't a clue as to the damage he's doing elsewhere,
And the hangers-on and the people who are using that to kind of deflect what they're doing.
It's a different kind of scary. It just kind of shows you, because everybody immediately said, well, this certainly makes, W look a little better. But you forget how scary it was when W was in, It was pretty scary time. So it seems like we just go from from crisis to crisis.
Well, we had a nice 8-year break.
We did. We did. And that was nice. My God. It was nice.
Wasn't it?
It was.
When the worst thing we had to worry about was a tan suit. Do you remember those days?
Yeah, because, not corrupt, for Christ's sake. You know what I mean? Just so many presidents, particularly the one that's in right now, just corrupt to the core. And that was nice for 8 years. You had somebody who really seemed to care about
everybody,
the country, and wasn't just in it for himself, and wanted to do good, and it just drives you nuts. We had a guy who was taught constitutional law.
Mm-hmm.
How far we've fallen. This guy can't find the doorknob.
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
I mean, they say there's people who say his typical day is sleep until noon and watch TV. Watch Fox for 3 hours. He's not doing anything.
He's the idle rich. He's literally
he really is. And this is all he's ever done.
Yeah.
They said that's why he's not terribly concerned with anything.
But John, he speaks to me as I've been forgotten in this whole Washington rigmarole. I need a guy who's going to speak his mind. I like what I see on the TV show. He tells people you're fired. He doesn't put up with that kind of stuff, John. Wait a minute.
I'm turning my phone off.
Are you saying he's racist? I haven't seen any evidence of that. No. We're building the wall because we need to stay safe. And this is going to keep us, because there's no such thing as tunnels or ladders.
when he did that, speech, from the Oval Office, and immediately afterward, all the fact checkers kicked in and says, most of the drugs are coming at the ports of entry. It's not where they would put the wall,
Yeah.
It's all getting smuggled in at the ports of entry. The only people that are coming are people that are they're fleeing. They're too busy fleeing oppression to be thinking about committing any crimes.
There's a really great meme. I don't know what it comes from, but it's a picture of two buttons, like two red buttons, almost like Ren and Stimpy. And there's a guy who's kind of sweating, trying to decide which button to push. And so this thing now is a lot of people will just like write above the buttons two different choices. And it always gets reused and repurposed. The one I saw that really made me laugh was now they put a MAGA hat on the guy and he's like sweating the decision. And the two red buttons, and one says, walls work. Israel has a wall and it works, so it'll work here. And the other one said, healthcare works everywhere else, but it won't work here. And he's trying to, like figure out which decision to make. But it made me laugh. It's like there's always a disconnect with that mentality, and that allows someone like our friend to thrive. And continue to thrive.
The last guy that could have talked him out of the crazier shit is gone. That Mattis was the last guy.
Yeah.
He was the last adult in the room, And with him gone, they said there is nobody between him and the crazier ideas. There's nobody saying this is not a good idea.
He surrounded himself with, nationalists. And
so now if he pulls out of NATO or something like that, it's scary as hell.
I believe Tawny sent me a link. It was about the mentality of Trump and what people are missing, and the idea that, so many things, especially in the foreign policy, he's always talking about somebody paying their share. He doesn't understand how NATO works. He doesn't understand that, NATO's a thing that keeps – well, he does, because he's probably, being fed this. He knows exactly what NATO does, and he knows who benefits if NATO dissolves. We know that, right? And then, you know, because it's the same people he's been accused of being buddy-buddy with.
Yeah, it's so funny. My God, that thing last week where they said the FBI was checking because they said there's no other explanation that he must be a Russian agent. I mean, it sounds silly on the face of it, like, you know, Manchurian candidate, but they said there's nothing else that can that can explain this behavior, because the whole thing when he was having a couple get-togethers with Putin with nobody in the room except the interpreters, and then he wanted the notes, the English interpreter, he wanted the notes so he could destroy him. They say, what reason could he possibly have for doing that?
Yeah.
Unless they said, you know, there's just... And then they went, you know, somebody from the FBI, they sort of mentioned the three ways you can be of use to the Russians. You're either a useful idiot, you have no idea, but they'll use you to their own ends, or it's one of these things, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, or there's just one where you're like, you know, I want this hotel built and I don't care who it hurts.
Yeah.
Anywhere else. I'm giving him that, you know, that multi-billion dollar penthouse at the top. It's like, my God, it's insane.
Yeah, this article that Tony, you know, he always frames everything in that, you know, Europe is, somebody's getting away with something. So, you know, Mexico's getting away with something because people are coming here, whatever. Ignoring the fact that in the last year of Obama's term, more people actually left America for Mexico and Central America and South America than it came in.
Right.
We're ignoring that. Now you have a manufactured crisis because, you know, you had the Republicans in power for 2 years and now the Democrats are in power. Now it's a crisis that we need to shut down the government for,
right,
even though they did nothing.
Right.
This article posted that, you know, posited that the fact that he frames things like that is because as a con man, and before he was ever a politician, he was this kind of New York real estate guy. And if you paid any attention at all to him, you knew the bankruptcies. You knew about Trump steaks, Trump vodka, Trump this, Trump that.
University.
You knew Trump University. You knew about the stuff. He was getting sued constantly.
Everybody in New York knew about him. Guys like Bloomberg and those guys, they said everybody in New York knew about him. They said they knew he was a con man, but there's only so much damage he could do if he's just a private citizen and a con man.
Yeah.
Now he's just like, there's no limit to the damage he can cause.
And so it was saying that, like, the mentality he has, the reason he frames things like that is because in the mentality of a con man, you're either doing the screwing or you're getting screwed.
Yeah,
So he always frames it as somebody else needs to pay their freight because America's getting screwed. He doesn't understand that it's like, you know, NATO is a collective. We're gonna pay we pay the most because we have the most to lose if Russia decides to do something, right?
He never looks at the big picture.
No,
I mean the real big picture. You know?
Yeah, exactly. You're keeping Russia out of the, you know, there's a whole, you're keeping Russia out of Western Europe.
He doesn't see it.
It's like, why are we, that's not the way it works. It's not like a big, we're not all going in on a pizza,
right?
You know?
So, but this is what happens when you have somebody who is not well-versed in history or law or anything. You know what I mean? Usually somebody who's president has some sort of background in something, or at least has people around him that do, that can at least explain it.
Yeah.
Know? And he has nothing.
Well, even if people do explain, he's not going to listen.
No.
He's not going to listen.
He's a rare case of somebody who does not have an inquisitive mind. He's not there to do good. And the other thing is, he didn't think he was going to win. They keep bringing this up now.
Keep going, John. I see you're having problems with your...
I keep unplugging my...
No, hold on. Let me keep going. Let me keep talking and I'll grab it. Go ahead.
I forgot where I was.
He doesn't have an inquisitive mind.
Oh, yeah. This
he
is
didn't
a
want
guy.
To win.
Well, that's the thing they say is the key to this. He really didn't think he was going to win. This was a way to get his brand out there.
Hold on. You're going to go get
okay.
Keep going.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, we're good. There you go.
Thanks. I kept unplugging my earphones because this thing was over there.
There's a podcast that records here on the weekend. I don't know the name of it, but God dang it, when I find out who they are.
It just seems like a lot of this, I guess what they say is this really explains why they were so blatant about all these Russian deals. They said, why would everybody around him be so in on this and not thinking about how it's illegal? And they said, it's very simple, because nobody thought he was going to win. He didn't think he was going to win. And these deals would have gone through and they wouldn't be under the microscope. Because he did win, this is all being scrutinized now, and a lot of it is illegal. And it's just because nobody thought he was going to win. They said, we're going to get a lot of press. we're going to get a lot of attention. I'll be able to, you know, get something out of this. I'll be able to cut some deals. I'll be able to maybe get like a Trump TV or whatever it is. Sell some stuff. They didn't think he was going to win. Now it's a problem. Now they're all scrambling because now it is a problem. He won. So a lot of this stuff is coming under the microscope.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he was doing it right up until the time that the election was over, that's now becoming a major problem for them.
Yeah.
But he never thought this was just a means to another end. He never thought he was going to win. You know?
Yeah, we had talked about that during the election, that he really didn't want it. You know, you had kind of alluded to the fact that this was just something, another thing for him to to accomplish. And I think a lot of that, you're right, he has no interest in being the president.
It kind of caught him flat-footed. Yeah.
He doesn't do things that a president should do.
No.
Or, you know, he's only doing it because, hold on. This segment is brought to you by our favorite James Bond movie. There we go.
That whole Trump Tower in Russia, that this could be the smoking gun. The more they find out about him trying to build that and what they were prepared to do.
Well, what's troubling to me is the fact that he's able to he still has control of the media, and all these people that argue that the liberal media this, the liberal media that, that's just something they say and not necessarily. I mean, insofar as the liberal media being an enemy to him, they've been his biggest ally. I mean, they got him elected. They could not stop. He got so much free airtime during the election because he would say these outrageous things. And it wasn't just the Alex Joneses and the Fox News that were carrying this stuff. It was CNN.
Yeah.
It was NBC. It was all these, because they need to fill that 24-hour news cycle.
Yeah.
So you have, what's the easiest thing to talk about? It's like, you know, it's no fun. Like we say this about when we talk about the movies, we have less to say when a movie is good, right, on the Digital Movie Club than when it's bad.
Right.
We can sit here and do 3 hours on why I hate Avatar and it's overrated, or we can do 3 hours on why Fast and the Furious is the worst thing ever to happen to movies.
Yeah.
And you know, we can go, and then, you know, Godfather, we can get wrapped up in 20 minutes because everybody knows it's good. And, you know, what am I saying that nobody else knows, right?
Right.
So,
you could say they were complicit in that they had to cover him.
And so,
but he got, because he was such a bomb thrower, he got more coverage.
Exactly.
Because they love that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, he's a knucklehead. And so they didn't think there'd be any way that he'd win.
And now he's turning out. But see, he's got great handlers because, you know, he comes up with fake news, and that's just a way to. It's like when you argue with someone, you know, you're trying to debate someone and you know you've got them beat, and they just throw out these throw out nonsense, and it and everybody's like, oh, and you're like, no, that's not what he's fake news. And then he doesn't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
It's just something he came up with. You know, it's the equivalent of throwing a smoke bomb.
Yeah.
And then just running out. Dave Chappelle had it down when he did the Black Bush sketch. He literally nailed what the Trump presidency would be. Go back and watch that sketch. It's everything Trump does now.
Yeah.
There's that scene where they're asking about oil. Why are we in the war for oil? And he's like, what did you say? And then he flips the water pitcher over at the hip, and everybody just takes off running. You know what I mean? It's exactly what he does. And so
deflect. That's why anytime they start getting close with this investigation, he does something that's really batshit crazy just so that the news cycle will get on. They'll jump on something else.
Yeah.
You know, they have to cover it. And so anytime things get a little hot, you'll notice he does something.
But it's okay, because in the background, quietly working, is our friend Mueller.
I love it.
Is our friend Bob.
I love it. And he doesn't – that the best thing is he's not concerned about sound bites.
Nope.
He's not concerned about statements. He's just working quietly away.
Yep.
He knows exactly what he's doing. All these people that know him saying he's doing this in exactly the right way. He knows where to start, you know, what order to go in. There's a definite methodology as to the order that he goes into with these guys.
Yeah.
The people that would flip, the people that, you know, that would not want to go to jail, so they'll flip, you know. And now, you know, Cohen knows where all the bodies are buried. So, you know, and is it this week?
Yeah.
They're supposed to talk to Cohen.
We'll see.
And now with the Democrats in charge of the House, they can, anytime they think that something's amiss, they can start looking into it.
We haven't done politics on here in a while.
So I know. I was thinking about that.
It's been nice.
We've been staying away from it. Yeah.
Well, it's right now this week has been.
You think people don't like to tune in when it's politics?
I think people want to listen to our show to get away from that stuff. But I think sometimes it's it creeps in because it's so important. I mean, you can't be, you know, we for a while we were doing Trump Dump and it was just so depressing.
Right.
We would leave the show on like a bad note. But I think once in a while it creeps in, and you know what? If they don't they can fast forward, and eventually we'll be talking about, you know, what do I always say? You know, it can't always be lightsabers and hobbits, but you know, every once in a while it creeps in. You know, and then everything going on this week with the Native American versus the, you know, the MAGA hat wearing teens, and how that's was everybody knows what they saw, but now somehow they're being gaslit by this PR company to make them question what they look. I've been bullied plenty of times in my life. As a matter of fact, I was telling Renee when we walked in here, I got out of the car and I saw a guy, and I was like, I know this guy from somewhere, and I didn't place him right away. As soon as he passed me, I was like, that guy used to bully me when I was like in eighth grade.
Really?
And you know, so yeah, I was like, I recognize that little smirk. That little smirk of someone who thinks they're untouchable, who thinks nothing's ever going to happen to them, they know they're getting away with something. You know, I'm not touching you. Mm. That's exact. And I don't care what anyone says. You can go back and watch. I don't care how it started, but I know.
And that's
Trump. I know that's, yeah, that's exactly who that kid grows up to be.
Exactly. Especially if you've got any money. You know, nobody ever said no to Trump, you know, and then the line of work he got into, nobody ever said no. And that's the problem here, is that when you're president, people will say no to you.
Yeah.
You know, and especially now when you don't have the entire Congress.
But John, he does good deals. So
I know the best people.
I hate the fact that you do deals. That's bad grammar, by the way. Stop saying that. John, we're going to play this game. I'm interested to play this game with
really?
You.
Really? With just two people?
We're just two people. Because you know what? It's not really a game. There's not. You know who's going to win? The listener. This is called Mixtape. And if you look at the – check out the box.
Ah,
check
nice.
Check out the bottom
of
the box.
That's great.
You can get this at Target. I think it's $20 at Target.
Hey.
It's called the Song and Scenario Game. So all we're going to do is we're going to for the next few minutes, we're going to play this game. There's not going to be any winners. The winner is you, the listener. I'm going to pull a card at random, and the card is going to have a scenario on it. And you're going to pick the song for that scenario.
Wow.
All right.
Mixtape, huh?
All right, here we go. I'm not going to do that one, John, because I know you don't do that.
I love that. First card you pick. I'm not going to do that one. Pick a card, any card, but not that one.
Okay. Oh, God, no. That's not a good one. These are not John Sandy.
What sort of thing is this? So it's picking a song for a situation.
John, what song would you sing during your audition for The Voice? What song would you sing? Now, this is assuming you can sing now. So I wanted to know what song you would pick if you were going to audition for the... You could pick any song. I already have one. I know what song I would pick. Are you ready?
I don't even know. That show was like America's Got Talent or...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or so what's the other one? Yeah. What's the one with Simon and those guys? American...
same thing.
What is it?
American X Factor. What is it called?
I know what that is.
American Idol. Yeah, let's
is that
say,
The Voice is?
Yeah, yeah. The same thing.
Okay.
Except the difference is, I think on The Voice, you get coached by a celebrity singer.
Oh,
so
yeah?
Like Christina Aguilera or... It was Gwen Stefani for a while. And what's the scumbag that my wife likes from Maroon 5? That dirtbag. What's that? What's his name?
How great. So you get coached by a celebrity.
Yeah, yeah. So this would be mine. This would be mine. Okay. You're going to be mad because I stole yours, John.
Okay.
Here we go.
Can anybody?
What do you think of that?
Find me.
They're going to coach you.
Yeah, yeah. But I nail it, John. Like, you know, this is the audition. Are you kidding me? I nail
love.
Well, you have to sing it like Marlena Dietrich. With W's.
What do you got, John? What's your song for your big guy?
So you're going to cue it up?
Yeah, I'll cue it up for you.
Okay. I would sing New Rose by the Damned.
Oh, I think we've talked about this.
So I'd come out, and my coach would be Rat Scabies.
Set the scene.
No, he's the drummer. So I guess my coach would be Dave Vanian,
uh-huh.
Or Captain Sensible. Uh-huh. Anyway, so I'd come out, and this is the song I would sing.
Okay.
There'd be a hush over the crowd, and I would
going
sing.
Out with him.
I'm not bored so much.
Ah!
inside of me.
Yes.
It's kind of strange, like a stormy sea. I don't know why, I don't know why.
You know why, John? Because if you don't get picked, you still rock that toilet. That's what happens.
And also, I mean, how good a voice do I have to have to do that? I love the dare, but how good do you have to sing to do that song?
That's a great. Hedging your bets. I like that.
That's also the one I want to hear as I'm being carried out to my grave.
Ah, John, here we go. You just sold a successful company you built with your bare hands from the ground up.
Holy cow.
As you walk the soon-to-be empty halls, and you think of all the people that have helped make it what it is,
Christ.
The challenges and the victories, what song plays in the background? I'm picking these at random now. These are not. Do you have one? Because I know which one I'm playing.
I know which one you're playing, too.
What is it?
Go ahead. You go first.
You tell me if you think it's what it is. All right, here we go. That's a thing. I got this. All right, so here I am. I've got my box, my cardboard box full of.
Thank you for the day. Those endless days, those sacred days you gave me.
It's going to be Days by the Kinks.
Man, that's beautiful. Makes you want to cry, huh?
That's a great song.
I won't forget a single day, believe me. I bless the light that lights on you, believe me.
Here we go.
And though you're gone, you're with me every single day, believe
me. I want you to play this at my funeral, John.
I know. This is actually better for a funeral.
Yeah. Go ahead, but that's okay. What do you got, John? Something sentimental.
I thought you were going to pick We Are the Champions. Another Queen song.
Yeah.
Let's see. I sold the company now.
Yeah, you built it from the ground up, and you're never going to see it again, but you know that it's, you know, you're living on Easy Street forever. You remember the good times, the bad times. He's really thinking about it.
I guess it would be We Are the Champions.
Is it?
All right.
All right. There we go. Let's do that.
I can't think of another song that works lyrically as well. Is that? Well, I thought you were going to take it.
No, man. Don't get mad because I took yours.
There you go.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Time after time.
This is all Queen and Kinks today.
It is.
I've done my sentence. But committed no crime and bad mistakes.
How many we had?
I've had my shots and kicked in my face.
Here's another one, John. Okay. What song plays every morning as you rush to make breakfast and get ready for the day?
Oh, wow.
I got it already. I already know. You want to know mine?
Go ahead.
Because I'm always like, here's what I do. Every night I go to bed and I say, I'm going to get up early tomorrow. And I'm going to make it happen. You know, this is going to be, you know, I'm going to get a start on the day. I end up waking like 10 minutes before I need to be somewhere, usually the podcast. And this is what's playing in my head.
Beautiful. And then you're spinning plates on the ends of sticks, right? How come nobody does that anymore? Spinning plates on the ends of sticks. That must have ended like around 65.
Because we have the internet now.
We have the internet. Boy, you've nailed it. Well, you could watch it on an app. If you could watch a cat playing the piano, you could watch these spinning plates.
Chicken playing the piano.
Okay. I got it. Okay. Let's see if you can find it.
What do you got?
Nick Lowe doing Heart of the City.
Nick Lowe.
Heart of the City. This is what's playing as I'm getting up, getting ready for work, fixing breakfast, getting my clothes on. Hope it's the right one. He did it like 3 times. There we go.
Oh, I like it.
Where the
John is miming, taking a shower, brushing his teeth. I wish you could see this. Now he's driving. That was great.
John, and then punch the clock.
Excellent. Ching. Excellent mime work, by the way. Some good stuff.
But isn't that, that's just to get your pulse racing. Isn't that perfect?
That's great.
Yeah.
John, what's the last song you listened to and cried?
Oh, wow. Days by the Kinks. You're playing that and I'm getting all weepy.
Oh, nice.
Oh, well, probably. What, you're gonna
play it? We don't have to play it. We don't have to play it.
Oh, you know, Christmas Eve watching It's a Wonderful Life, All Dang Zion.
You know what? The same thing as what I was going to say. Yeah. That, we hear that version.
But yeah, God, Days could just about do it, you know.
Here, let's play.
I know. I'll tell you the one. Here's one. Okay. See if you can find it. They've used this in a million soundtracks. It's a classical piece called The Adagio for Strings.
Oh, Samuel Barber. Yeah. Yes.
They use it every time they want you to cry
Platoon.
In a movie. Yeah.
Platoon.
Exactly. That'll do it every time. And they do it every. It's like easy pickings every time.
John is now.
Some people have an abiding respect for the land, and others don't.
These are things that go bump in the night.
That'll make you cry. That'll make you cry. Isn't that something?
That is a great one.
Now, I've seen that used in a lot of movies since Splatoon, and you go, well, this is what you do when you want people to cry. You just play it.
But that old anxiety when they're playing it on the piano, and that's always a good one. All right, that was a good one. I won't play it so you won't cry, John. John, what is the song that goes with your most memorable childhood memory? I've said this on the show before. It's not a specific song, but a specific group. I'll just play it. Later on in life, the lead singer was not. Didn't have the happiest life, but when I was a kid, this band was huge. My cousins listened to it. I believe I had a couple of 45s, and anytime I hear a song by this band, it takes me right back to being a child. So I'm going to drop that in right here on our shoe.
It's a really big shoe.
It is. This is any song by this group immediately takes me back.
There you go.
Musical family, John. Myself, everybody loved the Jackson 5.
Yeah, it's the happiest music. That's the most joyful. Like those first three hits.
Yeah.
You know, I Want You Back and
ABC.
It just, the most joyful music.
I'll tell you what. And listen, let me tell you what.
Like three in a row that were just like.
Let me tell you this. I love them all, but this is my favorite right here. This.
Again, singing The Love You Say from their new album, ABC.
Listen how happy that is. John, when we played tag in grade school, you wanted to be it. Love it. That seriously just drops me right into.
Oh, yeah.
My old house, the old dog, the old everything.
Yeah.
So weird. I have that's music that I still have, like a like that kind of reaction. It's like that scene in Ratatouille when he eats and he's right there falling off his bike. Whenever I hear the Jackson 5, it drops me into that.
Yeah.
It's a weird.
Music is great for that. You hear the right thing, it'll take you right.
What do you
back.
Got, John? What takes you back to being crawling around on the old floor?
Well. Probably the earliest thing I can remember hearing, I must have been like three or four, is Hit the Road, Jack by Ray Charles.
Ah!
My dad had a reel-to-reel player, and he was always, you know, it was always like Ray Charles or Herb Alpert in the Tijuana Brass or Elvis, you know. But I think the one I remember hearing.
This is a live performance. Better than Ray Charles, doesn't it?
No. I remember hearing that like when I was like three or four, like shaking packages under the Christmas tree, you know? They were like shaking one that just sounded like it had a million pieces inside, and it was like a Mr. Potato Head, you know?
Uh-huh.
So it really rattled. It really made a rattle. And I remember this playing, like coming out of the living room, you know?
Oh, that's so fantastic.
Yeah, Hit the Road Jack.
What a great memory.
Yeah. That's an old one. That's one of my earliest memories, yeah, Ray Charles.
That's amazing. Here we go, John. All right, no, I don't like that one. Some of these are better for. It's better for music that we don't listen to.
You're knocking boots. What are you listening to?
All right, here we go, John. It's 10 miles from here to the border. Sirens and light crest the hill a half mile behind you. Let's see if the old iron horse has it in her for one more dash across the prairie. What song plays?
Highway Star, Deep Purple.
Highway what?
Highway Star, Deep Purple.
Oh, Star.
Highway Star, Deep Purple.
We'll let John go this time first. We're in the same vein because... along the same lines, we got you should have played I'm in Love with a Car with my car.
It's a great one. I know, it could be an all Queen show.
Mm-hmm.
They have music for every occasion. Oh, great.
That's great. Going, John. There we go. That's it, John.
Yep.
The old radar love.
The old radar love. Let the old groaner take a...
John,
yeah.
What is the best song to listen to hanging drywall at the new McDonald's?
Is that really a card?
Yeah, that is.
Hanging drywall at the new McDonald's.
Mm-hmm. I got it, because Wes and I, the old Wes Nielsen and I, once played this song when we had to work overnight. One time, and I will play it for you. So this is what I would play. Anytime I have to do a monotonous task over and over, this is the song I play, and this is the version I play. So you guys can suck it. yeah.
Ronald McDonald, you can.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so Raider Love is still playing.
It's still Raider Love.
All right, sorry.
Hanging drywall at the McDonald's.
At first I was afraid, I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong, I learned how to get along. And so you're back from outer space.
What do you think of that version, John?
Is that cake?
That's cake,
yeah.
What do you got? You're hanging drywall, John. What do you got?
When the Levee Breaks by Led Zeppelin.
Oh! That's a great one. The old, good old Zepp. You're going to get the lead out, huh, John?
I'm going to try.
Yeah, let's get that lead out.
Music for manual labor. Swing that hammer.
Good one, John. Because kind of like, you need a rhythm to work to, you know?
Exactly.
Well, you know what, John? What I might do is I might mix it up and do this.
Now that's for knocking boots. Does anyone say that anymore?
You're so close, John.
Suddenly you're not hacking drywall anymore. You're doing something else. Probably driving. Whatever you're doing, you're driving.
John, what song have you memorized in hopes that the one day the lead singer will die? And the band will hold tryouts. And you'll be picked to take your place. I think Somebody to Love would have been. That would have already been kind of covered for me.
Oh,
do you have
God.
Another one that you want to, that you could actually croon? Like, if I could sing one song. Tell you, if I could sing one song perfectly, it wouldn't be.
A rock and roll song.
Yeah, it would be. I'll play it for you. Like, if one day they decide they're going to do a one man show about Frank Sinatra and they need a singer. This is the one I would do. This is honestly the one I would do.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say.
God, I love this song.
You're riding high in April, shot down in May.
This should be my song instead of Don't Look Back in Anger for when the Dodgers lose.
You ever see a Belushi doing this? I'm trying to think of what the sketch is. There's a clip of John Belushi doing that, and it's insane. And he does like a somersault or a cartwheel when he gets to a certain part of the lyric.
Oh, really? I've never seen that.
God, it's so great.
That's life.
It might be the sketch where he's doing. Oh, I know what it is. They're doing tryouts for the Prison musical. You know, I'm pretty sure that's it. And it's unbelievable. And then, so he's doing it. He's doing it all cocky and rat packy. And then all of a sudden, I think he does like a somersault or a cartwheel in the middle of the song.
That's beautiful. What do you got, John?
That would be a good one. What was the question?
If the lead singer dies, name a song you know.
Yeah. If the lead singer dies, you get to step in and do it. Well, I wouldn't wish death on him, but All the Day and All the Night by the Kinks would be great.
Oh.
Original version. 1965.
That is a good one. Yeah, we don't want Ray. You know what?
No. But I do know the lyrics. It'd be great to just stand up with him and do it.
I'm not content to be with you in the daytime.
You know, it sounds so simple.
Girl, I want to be with you all of the time.
You gotta do that all of the time.
The only time I feel alright is by your side. Girl, I want to be with you all of the time, all day and all of the night.
Greatest band of all time.
Yeah, they really were. And you got to get the syncopation right.
Yeah.
Like you were starting to say, it sounds easy, but you got to hit it right on
the... Yeah, and there's something about sounding snotty like that.
I know. That, and you really got me. He's got this sort of like snarky, snotty, oh, yeah. it's almost inexplainable.
You know? I love it. The Kinks, no, it doesn't get better than that.
It really doesn't. And God, and so, you know, there's two kinds of song he does wonderfully. That's one of them, you know, the sort of snide, cocky, and then Days is the flip side, you know.
He can bring some emotion. Waterloo Sunset, you know, where he brings some emotion to it.
Yeah.
So, John, you just got sideswiped, and the other guy took off. Mm. You stomped the pedal to chase him. What song plays in the background?
Oh, this is easy. Crawling from the Wreckage, Dave Edmunds. Oh, this is easy.
John, I love that you have this already. All right, here we go. Dave Edmunds, Crawling from the Wreckage. Love it.
God, I really heard it from the factory, driving like a nut in the rain. Don't think I was acting so hysterically, but I didn't see a thing until it came. Man, the dumps of purples in the takeaway, beating up the tranny at the counter. I put a few inside me at the end of the day. I took out my revenge on the revolution counter. Crawling from the wreckage, crawling from the wreckage.
See, John, you're more upbeat.
If somebody sideswipes
me, I'm going to turn my speakers on as loud as I can. And this is going to be blaring out of my car as I approach. So imagine looking in your rearview mirror. You just sideswipe me. You're looking in the rearview mirror and you're thinking, oh, I got away with it. I got that guy. And then you just hear this creeping up in the back. It's all over now. You didn't think it ran this way, but you're nearly dead. What song plays as your life flashes before your eyes?
Oh, Christ. See, Days works for everything. Let's see. As my life is flashing before my eyes? Christ. You go first.
Okay. All right, you ready? I'm going to have to skip a little bit. I got it already. I got it. This is it, John. Oh no. So I'm just laying there. I'm thinking, you know, it wasn't bad. I hosted a wildly unpopular podcast, and I had some laughs, and if I gotta go, this is how. And so I'm kind of taking stock, thinking of things. Maybe a few regrets creep in there, but I'm not gonna let it mar my exit. And
that's pretty good. That's very good.
As I give up the Force Ghost. Yeah. What do you think of that?
Waving to the ghost.
Yeah.
Saying goodbye to some old friends.
That's it, John.
It's a good way to go out.
Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't like it, then Hey F You by Beastie Boys. What do you got, John? How do you close it out?
I don't know. Mm.
It's a tough one.
It's a real tough one. You're summing up an entire lifetime. Well, I guess, I mean, not the whole piece, but that last part of Beethoven's Ninth, the Ode to Joy.
Oh, yeah.
Might be a way to lift your spirits as you're leaving this mortal coil, like as you're shuffling off this mortal coil. That last bit, that ending of the last mm-hmm. part of the Ode to Joy, Beethoven's Ninth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I could have picked something really poppy, but that's it. You know what I'm talking about.
I'll find it.
The last bit.
Hold on, I'll find it for you, John. Come on.
Come on, hurry it up, Beethoven.
No, it's earlier. This is where we open the vault and go, Merry Christmas. You're nothing but a common thief. I'm anything but common. And now that I've turned my attention to kidnapping, John. Wait, I'll find it.
Yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
That's good. Christmas. She lets go of the Rolex and you fall off the building.
Wouldn't that be a great way to? That would be a great way to go.
That would be a great way to go out.
Yeah.
Either that or, like I said, hey, F you, buddy. John, as you walk out of the courtyard, into the courtyard, it's evident you're not alone. Lurking in the shadows are 20 of the world's most lethal ninjas.
Christ.
You draw your samurai sword. It's go time. What's playing in the background?
God.
I know what's playing for me. Because it's not going to take me longer than 3 minutes to take care of 20 ninjas.
Okay, you do it first.
You ready?
Yeah.
You know what's coming, John. You know what's coming. I just stand there with my sword drawn until you know what moment's coming. It's coming. How about that? Do a little sabotage.
That's perfect. That's great.
Sabotage.
Don't correct me. It sickens me.
Mm-hmm.
Sabotage. How about
it's a hard one.
It is.
You want it to be perfect. Meanwhile.
I'm through at least
17.
Okay, put this on. So the way I'm going to take care of him is with broken beer bottles. So this will make more sense. So I jump out from behind the bar with two broken beer bottles.
Uh-huh.
And the song is Rip This Joint by the Rolling Stones.
Oh, I love this song. That is great.
So I spin around, jump off the bar, bust both bottles, and proceed to...
Just cut through ninja left and right. I like that you... I imagine you with, like, just breaking bottle after bottle and throwing them like ninja stars. That's what I imagine. And then we do this, the gratuitous scene with, like, somebody's got a bottle stuck in their eye.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? But not the sharp end. You actually get the neck of the bottle, like jammed in their eye. And the eye, like, squirts through the opening, you know, it's dangling outside. Oh, we could. John, I love it. All right. We're gonna wrap it up. We'll ask one last one. What song plays every time you think of your grandma?
Oh, no. Don't do this.
You want to switch that one?
That's too. Let's see. Maybe I can actually think of something. That's just really. That's personal. That's real deep.
Let's do this one. This one's really.
Well, yeah. Because she loved old musicals and things. This one she used to sing. I Love You, a Bushel and a Peck. Was that Betty Hutton? That's from some musical.
Oh, yeah.
From Oklahoma, maybe? She used to sing it. She used to be walking through the kitchen singing this thing. I Love You, a Bushel and a Peck. I don't even know if that's the name of the song.
The Andrews sisters sing it.
That's probably the version she was familiar with. Yeah. Let's see.
It's in that wax. Oh, yeah, yeah. Believe it or not, my grandma used to sing that, too.
Really?
Yeah, that was a very popular song.
So there you go.
I'll tell you what.
I've never heard that version, but I'll bet you that's the version she was familiar with, because that would have been the top, the hit parade, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My grandpa used to, my grandma didn't sing a lot, but my grandpa used to sing to my grandma a lot. He'd play the guitar. And so when I think of my grandpa, I think of things like Jimmy Crack Corn. Mm. He would play Fly in the Buttermilk. You know, he'd play on the guitar. He'd play. And my grandpa would sing. I get this from where I sing certain songs. So when he would come back from the track, my brothers told me that when he would come back from the track and he lost, he would sing Who's Sorry Now. And that's how you know he had lost. But he used to sing After You've Gone. To my grandma. So it's actually not a vocal version of it, but anytime I hear the Benny Goodman version of that song, I think of my grandma. It makes me think of my grandma. After you've gone and left me crying. After you've gone, there's no denying.
Who had the vocal hit with it?
Oh, there's a ton of them. It's one of those
Just name one. Just anybody.
Oh, geez.
So everybody had a hit with it. It's like Stardust. Everybody had a hit with it, right?
Yeah, like it was mostly an instrumental.
That's funny. Like Begin the Begin. There is lyrics, but you never hear them because nobody, you know. Yeah, some songs are better as instrumentals.
Dinah Washington has a really great version of it. It's really slow. Bessie Smith would probably be the biggest.
Now listen, honey.
And this is from Dinah Washington Sings.
How can you fix your mouth to tell me you're going away? Don't say that we must part. Don't break my aching heart. You know you love me.
How about that,
true,
John?
For many years. Love you night and day. Can't you see my tears?
What's the album?
How?
Dinah Washington Sings, Bessie Smith.
That's beautiful.
She has a version of.
Listen while I say.
What's the song about the flood?
After you've gone and left me crying.
How's that?
After you've gone.
What's her era? When did she stop recording?
She passed away. She died very young. I don't even think she was barely 40, I think. She had cancer. So she's mostly in the 50s. She actually makes an appearance on Jazz on a Summer's Day, if you ever track that down.
Wow.
She has a really great set in that. But she was a fantastic singer. My dad loved her, too. Mm. That's how I discovered her. But she passed away really early. Mm. But she was like a contemporary of you know, Nina Simone and
Sarah Vaughan.
Yeah, Sarah Vaughan and those Ella Fitzgerald, of course. But yeah, a little bit more on the soulful kind of bluesy side.
That's amazing.
But she has some. Let me find out the track listing for you, because that's a great album if you don't have it. And it's a great way to familiarize yourself with some of those old Bessie Smith songs.
So it's Dinah Washington sings the what?
Sings Bessie Smith.
Ah, there we go.
And it's Backwater Blues is the one that I was thinking. She's got After You've Gone on there. But yeah, that's a really great Dinah Washington, most famous probably for What a Difference a Day Makes. It's probably her biggest hit.
Yeah.
But she had some great tunes. Backwater Blues is a really good one. And that she did that one live at the Newport Jazz Festival, which is on the Jazz at the Summer's Day.
Was she on Verve?
She was on Verve, yeah.
When it rains 5 days and the skies turn dark as night,
get it. I might have a copy I can.
Man, you are the man. When it comes to jazz, you are the man. You always turn me on to this great stuff.
Listen, John, we're going to get that for you.
God, like playing that Ella Fitzgerald Paper Moon the other day.
Oh good
my
stuff.
God, I'd never heard it.
Did you find it? Did you track it down?
No, but you gave me all the info.
With
the Delta Rhythm Boys?
Oh, yeah. Big news. I just resurrected my computer that I thought was broken.
Ah.
So I have access to all of my stuff again, so I can
great.
Get you some CDs. I can burn you some copies.
Great.
You know what I'm saying?
I know what I'm saying.
I got to remember how to burn CDs. I don't even remember how to do
know.
It.
It's so funny that's now become that's archaic.
It's been so.
When you say that to some kids, they're like, what?
Let
come
me
again?
Send you a. Oh, there's a. I forgot to tell you, in the Beastie Boys book, Ad Rock, Adam Horowitz does this great. He talks about tapes, like the art of making a mixtape and how, you know, you would spend all this time and you would do it. And he talks about how people complain about it. He goes, look, I love MP3s. He's like, I'm not one of these people that are going to tell you that MP3s are awful, because they're not. He goes, it's the best thing that's ever happened. He goes, and anybody that tries to tell you that tapes or albums sound better, he's like, let me tell you something. A tape doesn't sound great when you had to fix it 5 times with Scotch tape because you played it so often that you wore it out.
Right.
He's like, so, yeah. He's like, don't let these older people fool you.
No, but the fun of making one.
Yes.
That it was so personal, and it would take all night.
Yeah.
And you were the one in control of the track listing, and then you'd do some artwork on the cover, you know? I mean, and then that meant something. It was like writing you know.
I still have a couple of mixtapes you made me back in the day.
And I've got some you made me.
Yeah.
I've got, like I said, I've got to get those, like, burned. I've got to get, before they disintegrate. At a certain point, tapes just disintegrate.
Yeah.
And I've got to get that one, Love Dem Vibes, where you're actually talking. You actually do we've got to play this on the show.
That was an early podcast.
From the 90s. It's you describing. You say, okay, now here's, you know, here's Lionel Hampton, and here's what's going on here. And you've actually got a little narration going on one of those.
Yeah,
you went beyond what anybody else did with a mixtape.
I'm good at what I do, John.
Yep.
Also love the sound of my own voice. We figured that out.
You made me some wonderful tapes. John Coltrane, Lester Young.
Yeah.
Lionel Hampton.
Oh, and it was fun. It was fun doing it because you got to revisit the music. And there was no cheating. You had to sit there and listen to the songs. And it was stuff that you had to really like.
Right.
To, you know.
You had to know it.
You had to know it.
If you're making a mixtape, you had to know it. And it was a very personal thing. It was like writing a letter to somebody.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's people that's how they... They tried to impress their girlfriends, you know?
Sure.
It's like, this is, you know, here it is. Here's my mixtape to you.
I used to make my wife mixtapes all the time.
And it's a very personal thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sit there. It was fun, though. Sit there and edit. You know, it wasn't like a lot of times when we would pirate music. Let's say my friend had Paul's Boutique and I wanted it. You bring over the CD or the LP. You do one side, you do the other side, you just let it play.
Sure.
You didn't really have to pay attention.
No.
A lot of the times you would because you knew you weren't going to see the lyrics again because you didn't have the...
Yeah.
Or so you kind of pay attention. Or
you didn't want to run out of space.
Yeah, you didn't want to... Yeah. And so you kind of pay attention while you were dubbing it, but then it's like, here's your album, thanks.
Yeah.
Now I have a copy of it and I can listen to it in my Walkman. Or Walkman, depending on where you're from.
Walkman.
But the thing about a mixtape was exactly, you had to... I remember going on road trips with my buddy Hiddish and Robert, and we would all bring a tape that we had mixed.
Yes.
So you could here you go. I'm going to play this. And we'd take a turn, and Robert would play some classical music and be like, here, I have this thing. It's from this this forgotten, you know, American composer by the name of Gottschalk, and we're gonna play his, you know, I'm gonna play this, and then I'd be like, okay, here's some jazz, like here's some, you know, here's some Gene Krupa drum solos, right? And Hiddish would be like, okay, this is the latest electronica from Britain that you've never heard of, from some guru Josh you've never heard of, and you know, and we would just spend hours like spinning music,
and it's like an education,
yeah,
and it's like you are the DJ,
yeah.
I had an experience exactly like that. We got John Fedoroff and Paul Stewart and me drove to Albuquerque, New Mexico. And so you can imagine with the three of us, you know, John puts on like Kraftwerk.
Yeah.
And I put on some Chuck Berry, and Paul puts on like Gregorian chants.
Yeah.
I mean, real Gregorian chants, yeah. You know? And it's just like, you know, you're in the middle of nowhere with just a full moon, you know, and you're driving in the middle of the desert, and you're going to get Johnny B. Goode followed up by, you know, We Are the Robots, followed by Gregorian chants.
I remember one time I called Paul to ask a favor. I think I asked him if he could work for me or something.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't do that, but what I can do is play this. He had some like tribal music, yeah. Some islander somewhere that he was like studying. He's like, yeah, I'm studying these tapes right now. And he's like, listen. And he puts it on, and I just hear like this chanting and this drumming. And he's like, there you go. He's like, I can't work for you, but I'll give you this.
Right.
And he was studying.
Yeah, he was really into that, really, you know, really off the beaten track.
Yeah.
And he would build, these instruments like a Kyoto.
Yeah.
He'd build stuff like that, you know, like a three-stringed something or other. That, like, one guy in Japan can do, you know, and he'd build it, and then he'd play some. I remember him playing it at home, and his dad saying something like, it's a sort of unpleasant sound, isn't it? Thanks, Dad. I built this instrument. It took me months. I'm playing this thing that nobody in America knows how to play. Like, it's sort of unpleasant, isn't it? It's like, yeah. But he was, you know, really into that stuff, you know.
The mixtape. There's something. So pick up this game if you like making mixtapes. Yeah. It's called Mixtape, the Song and Scenario Card Game by Breaking Games. And it's available for Target. It's $20. It's a whole deck of cards. It's,
yeah.
You know, probably like a good. Let me see how many cards are in here.
I love the package because it looks like a stack of tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we walk into John's apartment. And that's what's in there.
Yeah, I know, an entire wall of cassette tapes.
There's
got
to be at least, yeah. I don't know, there's a couple hundred cards in there.
But that's perfect for people that have made mixtapes because you've thought of this.
Mm-hmm.
You've thought of
it. Didn't take us long to come up with the answer.
Because that's where our brains work. What is the perfect song for if you're, you know. Yeah,
we've talked about it here. What's your favorite song? If you're going to come in, you know, as in a baseball game, what's your walk-up song?
You know. And everybody, of course, has their, you know, as they're laying me in my grave, what's the song you're playing at the funeral?
It better be Amazing Grace on bagpipes as you're laying me in.
Amazing Grace on electric guitar.
As you're ringing in Scotty style into the
Amazing Grace by the Damned. Bunka bunka bunka
bunka bunka bunka bunka bunka. Oh, John. All right. Well, John, that's it, my friend. So we've done it. We've got another successful podcast.
Okay.
Jake, Justine, and Patrick couldn't be here today. So it's just John and myself. And as always, you can follow us on the Twitter at Soup Complex, SOUP Complex. You can write us, like I said earlier at the top of the show. Like our Facebook page, please. That's at Soup Complex on the old Facebook. But anytime you want to interact, you have a question, you want something you want us to talk about or anything like that, Twitter is the best place to get a hold of us, but we do check our email from time to time. So, John, it was great. You're a good egg. Thanks for for being a good co-host today. It was nice just chewing the fat with you.
Always a pleasure.
And for everyone
always
else.
Always a pleasure.
Always.
Your obedient servant. I remain your obedient servant.
Have you heard that song on the Hamilton soundtrack?
Oh, is that a song?
It's called Your Obedient Servant, and it's them going back and forth, and they're going to duel. But it's great because it's your obedient servant, A.Ham and J.Burr.
That's the way Orson Welles used to close out radio broadcasts. Sometimes you go, I remain your obedient servant.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You know,
that's a song from Hamilton?
We're going to close with it today. So here's from Hamilton soundtrack. Here's your obedient servant. So for John, for everybody who's not here, fight the power. And as we always say, this transmission ends now. Oh, my God.
Don't you hate that?
Yo tengo algo que puede poner. Okay, here we go. Goodbye, everybody.
How is Hamilton an arrogant immigrant? Orphan, bastard, poor son, somehow endorsed Thomas Jefferson, his enemy, a man he's despised since the beginning, just to keep me from winning.
I wanna be in the room where it happens, the room where it happens, the room where it happens. You've kept me from the room where it happens for the last time. Dear Alexander, I am slow to anger, but I toe the line as I reckon with the effects of your life on mine. I look back on where I failed, and in every place I checked, the only common thread has been your disrespect. Now you call me immoral, a dangerous disgrace. If you've got something to say, name a time and place. Face to face, I have the honor to be your obedient servant, A. Dot Burr.
Mr. Vice President, I am not the reason no one trusts you. No one knows what you believe. I will not equivocate on my opinion.